This is the Freeman Report with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Freeman Report. It is Tuesday, the 23rd of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And coming up in the first hour of today's show, I'll be getting insight and analysis from a US war correspondent who says the global war, a global war, is unfolding in the Middle East. I'll also be asking why voting apathy amongst Americans is at the highest it's been for nearly 20 years. My first guest is US war correspondent Michael Yon. He served in the special forces in the US in the 1980s and after that became a writer and photographer and has since been embedded on multiple occasions with American and British troops in Iraq. Michael says the unfolding war in the Middle East is serious and that Israel will be lucky to survive. He says this multifaceted war is more complex than most people realize and says that many Iranian fighters from Hezbollah and weapons are already in places like Venezuela and that he sees them passing the Darien Gap into the US on a daily basis. So via the southern border and all the problems there. Michael claims there is a huge Iranian presence also in Canada after in-person investigations by him recently. Personally, I think we need to be careful not to create panic in America by tying what is happening at the border to what is happening in Israel, as this could fuel calls for a more aggressive approach in the Middle East, when what we really need, I think most people, sensible people anyway, agree, is what we really need is de-escalation. However, there is no doubt that the US border situation is a security threat that politicians in America desperately need to address. Michael is also just about to head to Taiwan on a fact-finding mission, so I'll be asking him what he'll be investigated while he's there. Then to discuss voter apathy in America, I'll be joined by US author Keith Gross, who is running for the US Senate. I think we know, me and all of you watching now know why US voters are apathetic, as I've had many guests on the Freeman Report talking about how most voters in the US don't want to vote for Biden or Trump, but the fact that there's no viable alternative given how the US electoral system operates. But what does Keith think Americans want? And do they even know what they want, given the state of US politics right now? But before we go over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news, I've got some good news of my own. Good news of sorts, that is, regarding the WHO amendments to the International Health Regulations, the IHR. Now, I say good news of sorts because the fact that tyrannical proposals were ever included for changes to this WHO treaty is, of course, very bad news indeed. The fact that these kinds of things are even being suggested is worrying. But anyway, the current proposal for changes include the following climb downs. Firstly, and this is really important, any WHO recommendations in the event of a pandemic will remain non-binding. Article 13A.1 has been dropped entirely. Now, this would have required member states to follow directives of the WHO as the guiding and coordinating authority for international public health. The move to erase the primacy of dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms from the treaty has also been dropped. That would have a huge impact, that would have been, because it would have been any considerations for, for restrictions such as lockdowns wouldn't have needed to have considered human rights and our fundamental freedoms. All of that has been taken out. Provisions that would have allowed the WHO to intervene on the basis of a potential health emergency have also been dropped, which means a pandemic must either be happening or very likely to happen, with the added safeguard that to activate its IHR powers, the WHO must demonstrate that coordinated international action is absolutely necessary. Proposals to construct a global censorship and information control operation led by the WHO have also been dropped. Thank God for that. What the hell has the WHO got to do with censoring online information? Provisions proposed to expand the scope of the IHR to include all risks with potential to impact public health, including climate change and food supply. Well, they have also been deleted. The scope now remains essentially unchanged, which is all about the spread of disease. Explicit recognition that member states and not the WHO are responsible for implementing these regulations, including plans for the WHO to police compliance, have been materially watered down. And many other provisions that are being diluted include surveillance mechanisms that would have given the WHO a mandate to find thousands more potential new pandemic signals, provisions which would have encouraged and favoured digital health passports, they've also been removed, and provisions requiring forced technology transfers and diversion of national resources. All of these have been significantly diluted or deleted. Now, the published document is only an interim draft that will be put before the IHR working group during this week's final negotiations, so it could change yet. But it is nevertheless good news that most of the provisions we were worried about have gone away. Vigilance is, of course, key, though, so I will be discussing what the final outcome is next week. I'm going to invite James Roguski, who is an expert on all of this stuff with the WHO. We'll get him on next week. To get in touch with me, please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you enjoy the show and appreciate what TNT is doing, then get yourself over to your favorite social media platform and give me and TNT a follow. We're on all of the major platforms, including X, Fakebook, Getter, Gab, TikTok. I'm on TikTok as well. So give us a follow and help spread the word about TNT. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk. TNT.
Delivering the facts.
Source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Okay, over to our UK news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news. What have you got for us, Gemma?
Well, within the last hour, Rishi Sunak has been talking about the deaths in the English Channel. That's five confirmed deaths of people trying to come across on small boats. He was talking about his Rwanda bill, which did get passed in the early hours of this morning after political ping pong from the House of Commons to the House of Lords. But just hours after this bill was passed, it was confirmed that five people had died trying to make the crossing from France to England. Unconfirmed reports that 100 people were being rescued. And two dinghies were in difficulty, and those were from charity workers that witnessed it firsthand. Talking about the deaths, Rishi Sunak said that this is why his Rwanda bill is so important. He said the planes were an act of compassion. We need to put compassion at the heart of these policies, he said. The European Court of Human Rights has criticised the bill itself, saying that it isn't particularly compassionate, and they're worried about torture survivors being sent to a Central African, East African country. But he was on his way to Poland. That's the second headline. He was speaking on a plane on his way to Poland, where he's due to meet his Polish counterpart, Donald Tusk. And he was also pledging, again, defending his further £500 million aid package to Ukraine, which he's going to officially announce today. That's bringing the total this financial year up to £3 billion that we're pledging to Ukraine. On the plane, talking to journalists about the Rwanda bill, about the deaths, he's then saying that the world, again, they're reinforcing this rhetoric of a possible World War III, said the world's at the most dangerous point now since the Cold War, which is why it's so important that he continues to give so much of our UK taxpayers' money to Zelensky to support them. Interesting one, that. And the anti-Islamist campaigner Tommy Robinson, aka Stephen Yaxley Lennon, is celebrating today. His case case has been thrown out of Westminster Magistrates Court. Huge police presence there and a big packed public gallery. Our own Katie Hopkins, that used to be a host here on TNT, she's been there supporting him. He was accused of failing to comply with the direction to leave an area of London last November. He was there at an march against anti-Semitism, a huge march. He was told by police to leave. He didn't. He said he was there as a journalist. Today, the case has been thrown out. No case to answer, says the judge, largely due, I think, to the fact that yesterday it emerged that the wrong date was put on the dispersal order. The policeman issuing the order put the wrong date on. I think that's probably got a lot to do with why the case has been thrown out. But Tommy Robinson, Stephen Yaxley Lennon celebrating outside Westminster Magistrates today on St. George's Day, which he's very happy about indeed.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why he's celebrating. It must be a huge relief that this court case has gone away. But it's not a great outcome, really, the fact that, you know, it was thrown out on a technicality. Why the police should be allowed to ban somebody from a city just because somebody who's doing a march, organising a march, doesn't want that person in the city or at the march, rather, is a bit ridiculous. I think that's what should have been the focus of the case. You know, does make me very suspicious with these things. The fact that the police officer put the wrong date, has that just been done? Because actually all they wanted to do was get at Tommy Robinson, and now they just want the whole thing to go away. Don't know, but it seems a bit ridiculous, doesn't it, that it's all of this and then it's just been thrown out. I do wonder what Tommy Robinson is going to do about that, because really I think, you know, he should be challenging whether they should be allowed to do that anyway. I have got the Voice of Wales on today. They've been at court today. They're on in the second hour of the show, and we're hoping to get Tommy on tomorrow as well to talk about the court case. But yeah, it is ridiculous, the premise that the police can just say you're not allowed in London because the organisers of this march do not want your presence there. That seems absolutely ridiculous to me. On these five deaths, do you know what? Hearing about all of this, it just made me think again, where are the arrests of these boat smugglers? I've never heard one newspaper story about anybody being arrested. Absolutely ridiculous. Go on, Gemma. Sorry, you were going to say something then.
Well, no, that's absolutely where the UK government stance is, actually. You're agreeing with our leaders here on this one, James. That's a first. But James Cleverly has tweeted and put on X that in response to the deaths this morning. He said that you know, we want to break the business model of the people smuggling gangs and get right to the heart of what they're doing. He says break the business model. He doesn't say necessarily go after the gang leaders, but I think your sentiments echo what a lot of people think. You know, how can this is very sophisticated and expensive operation, and making you know, huge amounts of money, aren't they, continue to carry on. But I do remember a few months ago on TNT I did a story that came out of Europe. It was a multi-faceted police operation: German police, UK police, French police. They've been working for years to get to the heart of these people smuggling gangs, and they did smash a big people smuggling ring. But I think it took 3 years investigation, and they eventually found, you know, where they were keeping the boats. They were in a lockup in Germany. But the amount of police effort, time, and money it took to get to the heart of it was considerable. So maybe Rishi is thinking this is going to be quicker. You know, just get them on a plane, get them to Rwanda, and leave it to Interpol. Well,
that's going to cost billions in itself over time. And, you know, we're not going to send that many people there. It just strikes me that, you know, this has been going on for quite a long time now. Why it can't be that difficult to get undercover people there. You know, we worked with a lot of Afghan interpreters. Some of them are coming across. Surely our secret services must be able to employ a few of these, pretend that they are smugglers, and then at least start arresting people, because I've never, ever heard one story in the press about anybody being arrested for this, despite people actually dying. You'd think that would... that would mean that there's an impetus within the law to hold these people to account. But I've never heard anything. Absolutely ridiculous. Right, Gemma, look forward to speaking to you in the second hour of the show. To the rest of you, we're going to be talking about the Middle East next with US war correspondent Michael Yon. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT's State of the Nation.
So Democrats voted along party lines on the first article of impeachment, which charges Mayorkas with willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, finding the charge unconstitutional. And yeah, there we go. So this DOA on arrival, pretty much as we expected, Timothy.
This is what makes me insane. The Democrats do with impunity what the Republicans will not scruple to do. This is exactly what I said Mitch McConnell needed to do with impeachment 1.0 in early 2020. Don't give it a hearing. Don't give it the time of day. Do not dignify it by holding a trial. It was garbage. This one is real. You know, Mayorkas is clearly systemically not complying with the law. So Democrats get away with not having a trial for a legitimate impeachment, but Republicans hold a trial for an illegitimate impeachment. It makes me nuts.
State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
We don't rock. We talk. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right. Okay. So we're going to be talking about the Middle East for the next 20 minutes. We're going to be getting an in-depth insight and analysis from U.S. Special Forces veteran and war correspondent Michael Yon. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Michael.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I'm actually near Tokyo now. I'm in Japan. I'm over here for World Health Organization pandemic treaty issues. As you know, that's another part of this global war that we're involved in, is weaponized migration, obviously currency issues, and basically the governments taking over the world, and prison planet issues. But the World Pandemic Treaty is one of those issues. And of course, now we've got wars that are growing in the Middle East, which will have massive effects.
Yeah, but maybe before we get stuck into the Middle East then, I didn't realize that you were focused on that. Give us your assessment of where we think we are with this treaty then.
Well, right now, you know, there was a big protest in Japan. I think it was April 13th. I was here, I should know, but I was in the middle of it. People were sending me a lot of links actually saying, did you know there's a huge protest going on in Tokyo? And I'm like, actually, the camera that you're looking at live is right beside me. I'm in the middle of it. Yeah. I flew in from Canada just for that thing. Misako Ganaha, the famous Japanese journalist, was speaking at it. So I showed up with her. And now they're going to have two more protests in May. One is on the 22nd, 23rd, and another will be the 31st of May. So that's two more in May. Both of those will be in Tokyo. And of course, there's another in that time frame. I've forgotten the date, but it's in late May in Switzerland. And then some others in other parts of the world, which are vital. A lot of people don't realize how important this is. This is a continuation of the pharma wars.
And how positive or optimistic are you, given that we've just learned that the interim draft document for IHR changes, a lot of the things that we were worried about in that have all been deleted or severely watered down. So I think that's good news. But, you know, we know there's lots of smoke and mirrors around all of this stuff, that, you know, transparency is just not transparent what is going on. How positive are you about that news in relation, or do you just think this is another tactic?
It's another tactic. There needs to be no treaty. We don't need it. United States should remove itself from these organizations. United Nations, it also is just a nothing but poison. Everywhere I go with the weaponized migration, the main engine behind it is the United Nations. You know, there's a giant United Nations university headquarters in Tokyo. I was just at it a few days ago. It's massive. It's a big building. I published it on X. I mean, they're huge. I mean, this is like a MENA country, actually, United Nations everywhere I go, whether it's Panama or Philippines, or they're kudzu. They're taking over the world, and we need to defund them and get back from them. You know, the U.S. Army South headquarters that used to be in Panama at Fort Clayton, people, veterans from Panama know where I'm talking about. That's right by the Panama Canal. I've spent months there in recent times. We gave that back. Jimmy Carter gave it back. It was turned over in 1999. And right now it's filled with more than five dozen NGOs, including IOM, which is the International Organization for Migration. That's the main engine of the weaponized migration. It's the UN IOM. They're in the United Nations. But basically, almost the entire former U.S. Army South headquarters is UN offices. And the ones that are not UN offices are other NGOs, like the Clinton Foundation is there. I've published photos of that. I'm there all the time. There's the Hyas is there, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. Confucius Institute is there. Just a long list. I mean, it's the who's who in the zoo of basically evil, that's being funded by the United States, Canada, Germany, all, in Japan, where I'm at now. If the Japanese knew what was really going on today, just a few hours ago, we were in a town in Saitama province. I'm in Saitama province, actually. I'm not in Tokyo. I'm just outside of Tokyo. But there's actually a town here that's largely Kurdish now. And so they're, believe it or not. So a lot of people don't think that a country like Japan would open its doors, but they are. And those doors are starting to be blown open. And the reason that this is being done is a replacement population, right? For instance, Canada, where I was just at, I don't know, 10 or 12 days ago, I left Canada to go to the World Health Organization pandemic treaty issues here in Japan. But in Canada, I mean, if you land in Toronto, and in Toronto, there's welcome signs there for the Ukrainians. I mean, there's multiple welcome signs in English and Ukrainian, a bunch of chairs lined up where all the Ukrainians are being in process. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, no, and we hear obviously about the actual people coming across the borders, whether that's in Europe, the US, or other parts of the world. But I'm very, very suspicious, and I know a lot of people are, about why these people are coming all of a sudden. And there is, we hear the odd story, but not a lot, whereby people are actually being encouraged to leave their own countries and try and come to Europe and the US. Is there any evidence at all to suggest that the UN is involved in that push?
I'm one of the experts on it. I mean, you're talking to okay. one of the main people. I mean, I'm out there with them all the time. For instance, the rape kits that the IOM hands out. I'm the one that first reported that, right? I'm the one that took so many people to the Darien Gap, such as Congressman Brett Weinstein, Chris Martinson, Laura Loomer just took her, Epoch Times. I've taken, 50 or 60 people down to the Darien Gap, Darien Gap, Panama, between Colombia and Panama. I've probably spent 6 months there since Biden was installed. So I'm down there all the time. So I can talk about this. I can talk about this for a week without taking a breath, right? So that's just Panama. Sometimes I leave there and I go over to Netherlands, where it's also happening. There's specific reasons why these specific areas are being targeted. For instance, let's go back to Panama. There's the Panama Canal, which is absolutely vital for U.S. interest. And by the way, that can be shut by those missiles that the Iranians are supplying to Venezuelans, right? A war is brewing between Venezuela and Guyana next door over energy and other issues. And bottom line is, Panama is vital terrain for the United States. And so I'm down there all the time, and I take people down. And then I often go to Netherlands, more vital terrain, because Rotterdam Harbor is there. And just south of Rotterdam is Antwerp, right, Harbor. Those are the two biggest harbors in Europe. Those are these arteries right here, right? And they're both two of the top 10 in the world, right? Now, there's a train that goes all the way from Shanghai, China, and other feeders in China, all the way across Asia, to Rotterdam Harbor. Not a coincidence that that's now open. I've been to the Shanghai side, and I've spent a lot of time. I spent about a year in and around China. I'm watching them as they build up. Sorry, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. I was going to say, Michael, I mean, this is really, really interesting information. But is there any evidence at all that the UN is directly involved in encouraging people to leave their homes and come? Is there any evidence of that?
Oh, 100%. I published this, I don't know, let's say for argument's sake, 200 times. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, we can go into detail. For instance, down in the Darien Gap, or okay, let's go back to Fort Clayton. Fort Clayton is in Panama City, Panama, right? So anybody that's in Panama now or has access to an airport, you can get to Panama very quickly. You don't need a visa if you're American or any European countries that I know of. You can just go right in, go right to Fort Clayton. Now they call it the City of Knowledge. Ciudad de Saber, which is City of Knowledge in Spanish, right? It's right beside the canal. That's the old U.S. Army South headquarters. As you go into the City of Knowledge, you'll see the Panamanian flag flying and the IOM flag flying, right? The IOM, the International Organization for Migration. This is right there. This is some of the most vital real estate on planet Earth has now been taken over by United Nations. So if you go into there's no gate, but you go into what used to be the gates, take a right. Right by the flagpoles in that first building on your right is IOM. It's building 110. I'm there all the time, right? And so all the buildings all around there are the World Food Program and UNHCR, all these different things, right? Just who's who in the zoo. And it's more than 60. It's at least 64, right, that we know of, NGOs and IGOs and nonprofits that are all aiding and abetting the flows through the Darien Gap. For instance, the Darien Gap, again, is that passageway between Colombia and if you can get your feet anywhere in South America, you can get to Colombia and then get through the Darien Gap. This is also set up by the United Nations, all of it in the open. I mean, you should see some of the drone footage and so much video footage that I personally have made and published. It's unbelievable. Their names are on their tents. I mean, you know, they've got the names, you know, IOM on the tops of the tents, right? And I'm in the camps. I'm not just outside in the jungle. I am outside in the jungle. You have to go three hours upstream on dugout canoes to get to some of these camps. I mean, it's properly in the jungle with crocodiles and monkeys and stuff. But I'm in the camps all the time. I'm physically there with the Iranians and everybody else, lots of Chinese. And it is absolutely 100% United Nations doing it right in front of God and everybody. They don't even hide it.
Wow. This is really interesting stuff. We've got to take a quick break for the news headlines now, Michael. But when we come back, I want to talk about, because you mentioned, I've read some of your stuff, and you've mentioned the fact that Iranian weapons are now in South America. And you, with the implication that these fighters that are, you know, not exactly friendly with the United States are actually crossing into the United States. So I'd like to get your assessment on how much of a security risk you think this is for the US. So we'll take this quick break and we'll be back with you in just a second right here on TNT.
Well, what's the news?
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan with your TNT headlines. Australia's Prime Minister's lashed out at ex-boss Elon Musk as the billionaire goes into battle to protect free speech.
I just find it extraordinary that this bloke thinks he's above the law.
The UK will start detaining migrants within days after plans to send them to Africa was approved by Parliament.
No ifs, no buts. These flights are going to Rwanda.
And 10 people have been killed in a horror mid-air collision involving two military helicopters in Malaysia.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Now, Michael, I don't think it's not a secret, obviously, that you know, the security threat against America at the moment is fairly high with all of the things going on in the world. And of course, we keep on hearing about this southern border. How much of a security threat do you think that is? Not just the fact that people are coming across, but, you know, I think you're in sort of implying that actually you've got Iranians crossing there. And there is also weapons, Iranian weapons in South America as well. How much of a security threat is that, Michael?
Okay, I'm not saying that Iranian weapons are in the United States, but Iranians, absolutely. I mean, I see them this close all the time, right? I mean, I'm talking with them face to face all the time. They come through the Darien Gap. Actually, many of them fly to Venezuela. Now, Venezuela has Iranian weapons. Venezuela has those same missiles that the Houthis are using in Yemen to close the Suez Canal. They can close the Panama Canal. They can easily do it, right? And so Iran is has a very close relationship with Venezuela, and as does Chinese Communist Party and Russia, right? And so a huge amount of Venezuelans flow through, but Iranians can fly to Venezuela and get passports, Venezuelan passports, and they look like Venezuelans. And actually, believe it or not, a lot of Hezbollah literally speak Spanish. They speak Spanish without an accent because many of those grew up in places like Venezuela, right? So they actually were born in Venezuela, right? So there's actually, what I'm getting to with this is I see Iranians coming through every day that I'm there. And also Afghans, and it's like 140, 150 countries. Chinese, huge numbers of Chinese, right? You'll see. I remember when I first started going to the Darien Gap was just shortly after Biden was installed. I was in D.C. for the so-called inauguration, flew down to El Paso immediately because I was there with Chuck Holton and Masako Ganaha, Japanese journalists. We thought that they were going to start flooding over the border, and they did. So we immediately, after Texas and Mexico, we went down to Mexico for a while. Then we flew down to Colombia, and we came in through the part of the Darien Gap on the Colombian side, very dangerous, and then came back and flew around and went to the Darien Gap on the Panama side. And since that time, I've spent about 6 months down in the Darien, and I bring huge amounts of people. Like I said, I don't know, 50 or 60 people. New York Times tracked us down in the last trip and wrote a hit piece on it. It was great. Everybody was worried about the hit piece they're going to do. I'm like, bring it on, bring it on. We're showing that the New York Times actually will dispatch people to the Darien Gap and to not focus anything about the invasion, but focus on us, which they did, which was great. So I kept spreading the hit piece around and saying, look how important we are, right? So you can take that. You can take that lemon and make big lemonade out of it. But the bottom line is, Iranians are coming through, and a lot of those are aided by HIAS. The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society has an office right beside what we call China Camp in the Darien Gap, or in Darien Province on the edge of the Darien Gap. There's Darien Province, which is a province in Panama that borders Colombia, and then the gap is that area in Darien Province and in Colombia that is, there's no road for about 60 miles, right? So it's pretty epic jungle out there. So they have to cross. So the aliens coming through have to cross through the Darien Gap. But HIAS has an office right next. I almost rented that a couple of years ago, but HIAS got it before I did. But HIAS is the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. Secretary of Homeland Security, Ali Mayorkas, was a board member on HIAS. He was a board member. This is crucial. So he was actually, he's a son of Cuban refugee parents. As Cuban refugee parents came to America, they're Jewish. So that's why he's on the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, because he's Jewish, right? And he's a refugee. And now he's the Department of Homeland Security chief. Now he's been to that camp. I was physically present when he came. That was in 2000. I got photos of it, a lot of photos and videos, in fact. So he came down. And since that time, he's built up the camp tremendously. He came down on April 18th, 2022. I waited for 4 days. He actually came. And now the camp is much bigger, and it's flowing through. HIAS is helping Iranian, literally Hezbollah. There was a Hezbollah caught recently in El Paso who had come right through that camp, right?
So Michael, and look, we've known for a long time. I mean, it's not a secret that the Biden administration wants all of this, because they're even flying people in directly, illegals now, into America. So that's clear. I guess what's not totally clear is why is all of this going on, particularly given the security threat that this poses to America. Some are saying because the Democrats want to rig the future elections by getting all of these people in. I'm not so sure, because surely if this results in a terrorist attack on America at some point, the Biden administration are going to be on the hook for this. What are your thoughts in terms of why this is going on and being organized by US government and officials?
I'll show you why. Here's a couple of books I've been studying. Weapons of Mass Migration. That's an interesting book, right? This is an old weapon in warfare, is migration. But what's really going on, another book that I'm studying, this is a battle between oligarchs, right? This is oligarchs versus oligarchs. The Democrats may think they're big stuff because they're Americans, but they're actually useful tools as well. On the oligarchical, on the global oligarchical scale, they will be destroyed. The United States at this rate will be destroyed. And the Democrats they think they're big shots and they're going to outlast this. They won't. This population is, you saw that guy that just set himself on fire and lit himself on fire in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, second guy that's done that recently. That's what the Democrats are doing. And the Republicans, the ones who just voted for instance, giving away these latest billions of dollars to Ukraine and Israel. They're basically that guy, right? They've set themselves on fire. It will destroy them. It will consume them to death. I mean, it will destroy our country. And this is a replacement population. Of course, there's more than that going on. There's the World Pandemic Treaty. There's the pharma, literally weapon of mass destruction that this jab was and remains. And then there's the currency that, you know, that clearly the U.S. economy is being destroyed. And we're going to a point where the entire planet will be a smart city. You know, they don't call these things smart cities because nobody would go to an actual, you know, concentration camp. So they give it a nice name, smart city. But it's basically, these are prison camps.
Yeah, Michael, listen, I didn't realize we were going to get onto this topic, but you'll have to come back on at some point to talk about this more in depth. We've only got a couple of minutes left, but I do want to hear, you're off to Taiwan, I think, soon. Tell us what you're going to be doing there. You're obviously there as a reporter. What are you going to be investigating?
Right. I'm going to Taiwan for some meetings in regard to all these things, and then I'll be back to Japan. I may shoot over to Philippines or some other place, but I'll be in this area for a while and then back to the United States. Obviously, this is also a very important part of the world. I have a lot of experience in Asia, probably 18 years or so in 25 Asian countries. You know what I mean? So this is sort of my backyard. I know as much about this as I do about Europe, where I also spent many years. And so I have a lot of contacts over here, and I can quickly dial into the pulse of what's, you know, the latest situation. So tomorrow, going straight into meetings into Taiwan as soon as I land.
Michael, you'll have to come back on because I'm really, really keen to find out what's actually going on in Taiwan. It's kind of on the back burner at the moment. We hear the odd story, but clearly, I think, you know, if Trump gets in, I think the implication is the Ukraine proxy war will cease to exist and America's attention then will turn to Taiwan. That's what I think is going to happen potentially if Trump does get in. So it's an incredibly important part of the world in terms of these conflicts. So, Michael, thank you for coming on the Freeman Report today, and please do come back soon.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael Yon, ladies and gentlemen. Right, okay, we're going to take a quick short break now, and then we're going to stay on US politics. There's polls out recently that are showing that apathy, voting apathy in the US is at a 20-year high, despite all of the drama in US politics at the moment. So I'm going to be asking my next guest, what is going on in the US with US voters? So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most. To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
Prescription drug pricing points to corporate
Freedom of the press is about your right to know. It's about your right to be informed. Today, there are real threats to press freedom. And your right to know about the world around us. We must protect our right to know, no matter what kind of news is important to you. Before it's too late. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, we're going to be talking about a lot of things in US next. We're going to be talking about the elections, but also you'd think in an election year that Americans would be really enthusiastic about voting, but that's not the case. I think apathy is at a 20-year high at the moment. So I'm going to be asking my next guest, what is going on? He is Keith Gross. He is an author, and he is also running for the Senate. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Keith.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be with you this morning.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. Listen, let's start off with voter apathy. What's going on? Because you'd think, especially with all the drama at the moment in America, that people will be chomping at the bit to get to the polls. But we're told, actually, based upon recent polls, that Americans are apathetic at the moment. What's going on, Keith?
You know, I think we're seeing this sort of apathy because for a long time, most elections that I've lived through, almost my entire life, the choices that we have before us are never fantastic choices. It's always that we have to choose between the lesser of two evils, it seems. And so I can understand why voters become apathetic, because no matter which way they vote, they don't feel like they're going to get what they ultimately want. You know, we've seen both parties in our system that have run roughshod and undermined American values and destroyed freedoms. And when both parties have participated in this problem, the people become disenfranchised in a way. Why vote if it won't matter? I can understand the apathy, but I tell people, you know, and I've been traveling around the state here, I tell people the importance of getting involved, that 2024 is a pivotal year and we've got to get people involved. That's how we make a difference.
How does that tie in, though, because with Trump in particular, because when we see him touring the US, I mean, he literally fills stadiums. I mean, Biden, I can kind of, on the Democrat side, I can understand. I mean, his approval ratings are shockingly low. And when you see him trying to sort of pull a crowd together, quite often it's not very many people at all, maybe a couple of hundred people. So how does that tie in? Do you think this is more to do with the Democrats, or do you think that actually this is with regards to Trump as well?
Well, I'll tell you, while voters on average may seem apathetic, Trump supporters are anything but. They are highly enthusiastic, as you pointed out. He routinely fills stadiums. But even some of these folks that I've met, you know, they express concern that perhaps their vote would not be accurately counted. You know, a lot of people believe that in 2020, there was a lot of voter fraud and missing votes and votes that weren't legitimate being counted. And so people feel like, why vote if it isn't going to count? But generally speaking, Trump's voters are highly supportive. They are very enthusiastic, and they're going to show up in record numbers this November.
I mean, that's a good point you raised there about the last election, because I've seen a few polls and I haven't got the exact number in my head, but it's clear that an awful lot of Americans believe that election was rigged. How much of a threat do you think this is for American democracy if people no longer trust in their elections?
Well, I can tell you that I'm very hopeful that this November will go differently and that we can restore people's faith in our electoral system. Obviously, it would be very dangerous if people believe that their votes do not matter. That's the only thing that holds any democracy together. You know, this republic is about electing your officials so that you have valid representation. We can't lose that, or we may lose our republic altogether.
Yeah, it is a big problem in the US. Keith, you've written a book called Dirty Roads to Runways, Defending the American Dream for the Next Generation. It's an interesting title. I kind of assumed, based upon the news we're getting from America over the past couple of years, that the American dream is dead. Is it?
You know, I don't believe the American dream is dead. I do believe it's imperiled. I do believe that we have to make some swift changes to national policy in order to maintain the American dream. But I've lived the American dream, and I'm relatively young. I just turned 40, and I went from a family that didn't have a lot to being very successful in business. And that's only because of the freedoms in America that allowed me to grow these companies to national businesses. we've got to preserve those freedoms because it is the freedoms that make the American dream possible.
And how much do you think, because obviously we've got the advent of AI at the moment, and there's a lot of talk about how that is going to replace a lot of jobs in the coming years. How much of a problem for that is AI in potential for the American dream? Because, you know, if people are essentially their jobs are being taken and, you know, there's talk about governments putting people on and paying people to stay at home. How much of a threat is that to the American dream, do you think?
Well, of everything you just said, I think the greatest threat would be governments paying people to stay at home. These sorts of socialist, Marxist, universal income programs disincentivize work and productivity and ultimately lead to the downfall of any society that's implemented it. So I certainly hope that that is not what happens. But as far as AI goes, I don't think it's going to necessarily remove jobs or replace jobs. I mean, people said this whenever the internet was invented, that it was going to be, you know, the downfall of all jobs. Didn't turn out to be the case. It turned out to be an area of massive innovation and created tons of productivity, tons of jobs. I think AI will do the same thing. If we harness it well, it can be a great opportunity.
I hope so, because some of the forecasts that I've seen, you know, we're talking sort of 20-30% of jobs going in the next 5 years. But I love your optimism. I do hope that happens. Now, Keith, you're running for the Senate in Florida, aren't you? Tell us how your campaign's going at the moment.
It's going great. So just yesterday was the official kickoff of the campaign where you put your name on the ballot. And that's the qualifying period that ends this week. So we're less than 4 months now from the primary election. Many seats in Congress, including this Senate seat that I'm running for, are not really competitive at the general election. They're generally competitive only in the primary election. So I'm running in the Republican primary to be the next United States Senator from the state of Florida. And the primary will be held on August 20th. That's basically the entire ballgame here.
Right. Okay. And what are the big issues at the moment for people in Florida?
Well, as you can imagine, you know, one of the biggest issues is the economy. Inflation is causing every family to go through difficult times economically. Things cost, you know, 25% to sometimes 100% more than they did just a few years ago under Donald Trump's administration. Couple that with an influx of nearly 10 million, I think is the number now. Illegal immigrants coming across our southern border, consuming resources that we're already short on. You know, these even big cities with massive budgets like New York and Chicago, they're depleting their city budgets and having to cut, you know, firemen and city workers in order to pay for the costs they're incurring, dealing with a whole lot of people that need care that they did not have in their budget. And so, you know, the people generally all over the country here, they're frustrated. They're frustrated by wasteful government spending that's caused inflation. They're frustrated that their government is putting illegal immigrants ahead of our own citizens, and they want to see change. And so we're going to make sure that we campaign on that, that we encourage people to vote for change.
And what's happening with these illegals that the Biden administration were planning to fly into America? Because we heard a couple of weeks ago, I heard news that 320,000 odd had been basically allocated to Florida to be processed. What's the latest on that?
You know, they haven't been very forthcoming in releasing a lot of information on these flights. But, you know, I want to know where the money's coming from. Who's funding these flights and how do we shut that money off? Because taxpayer money should not be used for something that is a violation of our laws. We should expect our government to use our money wisely and to follow the laws written by our representatives, but that's not what we're seeing right now.
But what is the situation, though? Because, I mean, if the Biden administration wants to send these, I think it was 326,000 illegals to be processed in Florida, can DeSantis just say, no, we don't want that here? Or is it more complicated than that?
It is, unfortunately, much more complicated than that. The Supreme Court here has gotten involved, and they have not been as supportive of the states as one might imagine. You know, when our founding fathers wrote our Constitution and the states ratified it, I'm confident that none of the states would have ratified the Constitution if they believed they could not secure their own borders from outside invasion. they relied on the federal government to do so, but they never gave up their own right to do the same. And so we've seen it recently in Texas, where Texas installed barriers at the border, and the federal government sought to remove those barriers and allow illegals in over the border. I think that's the similar situation that we're going to see happen as Florida objects to the federal government putting illegals in place.
I mean, it seems absolutely crazy to me that the Biden administration is just flying these people in. What do people in Florida make of this?
Everyone that I talk to about this is upset about it, as you would imagine. We are all frustrated to see a government using our money and putting us last. We understand that, you know, if we pay taxes, those taxes need to be spent taking care of Americans and following our laws. No one likes the fact that that is not going on right now. No one likes the fact that millions of illegals are coming across our border unvetted, unchecked, and we're housing them, feeding them, clothing them, educating them. This is very expensive. Meanwhile, we have veterans who've served our country honorably, and they're waiting months for the medical care that they deserve. That sort of discouraging picture is a lot of why people are frustrated with the way things are happening in Washington right now. And it is ultimately the reason we need massive change quickly.
Why is it then, if, I mean, look, you know, the economy's not in a good way. There's, you know, we've got this illegal migration problem in America. There's lots of other things. Inflation has been running high because of all the money that was printed. The Biden administration continually giving more billions and billions to Ukraine, which is taxpayers' money in the US. Why is there not a bigger gap in the polls between Trump and Biden, given how dissatisfied I think so many Americans are with the direction of the country?
You know, I think the polls are not as reliable as we would like to think. I remember back when Donald Trump was running against Hillary Clinton, and the polls showed she was 95% likely to win. And obviously that did not happen, wasn't even close. So I kind of discount what the polls say. I know that people are frustrated with the way things are, and I believe people are going to turn out and vote for Donald Trump and that he will win in November, because that's what we need. We need to put someone strong back in the White House. We need to start cleaning up these problems and draining the swamp, as he likes to put it.
Yeah, we need somebody in the White House who's actually running the country, because it's clear Joe Biden isn't running the country. Now, obviously, Trump at the moment, he's distracted with this court case in New York. How much of a threat do you think that is to him being able to run in this year's election? Or do you think that this is all just going to just be a few bumps in the road?
Well, I don't think the court case itself is going to cause him any problems. In fact, if he ends up losing, it will probably win him the election, because most Americans, even Democrats, understand that what we're seeing right now is a weaponized justice system. It's no accident that they dragged their feet and delayed these charges until the maximum point of impact, when they could distract him from a presidential campaign. This sort of miscarriage of justice, this manipulation of our prosecutorial system, is not taken well by either party. Mm-hmm. No one likes to see this. And so, if anything, I believe these prosecutions will increase his chances of winning.
Yeah, I mean, do you think there's any chance that he'll be sent to prison and that might be a problem?
I don't think that he would be sentenced to prison. Any of the charges that he's facing, while they do technically carry some jail time, a judge would really be tempting the largest disaster this country's seen in nearly 100 years if they were to do such a thing, I fear.
Well, because of the reaction that we would see from Republicans up and down the country.
Yeah, I think if you have a government that begins imprisoning its political enemies on made up charges and you know, prosecutions that do not seem legitimate in the first place, the people are not going to go along with it. If it were a legitimate issue, perhaps, but these cases do not appear to be any sort of legitimate legal issue.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. By the way, that fraud case where there is no victim of fraud, of course, a lot of people just look at the headlines and they don't realize actually what a stitch up that case was. So no, I agree with you 100% there. I'm going to ask you this question because I ask everybody who I get on from the US. At the moment, Biden is the candidate for the Democrats. But of course, they changed the rules. We've got that national convention coming up in August. So they could change Biden. And it's, you know, it's shocking that he's even contemplating running for another 4 years, given his performance at the moment. Do you think come end of August that Biden will still be on the candidate for the Democrats?
You know, I don't think he will be their candidate. I think that they were going to play some game at their Democratic convention and they will replace him. I think he's going to gracefully bow out and endorse someone else. But I don't know. You know, I've seen a lot of conspiracy theorists say it'll be Michelle Obama. You know, I used to discount that idea, but lately the conspiracy theorists have been right about nearly everything.
They certainly have, haven't they, Keith? Definitely. You're the second person, by the way, who's agreed with me, because I think there's no way they can put him on the ballot in November. But it'd be interesting to see what happens this year. Thank you very much, Keith Gross, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming on the Freeman Report.
Thank you very much for having me.
Right, we're going to take a short break now, and then I'll be back for the second hour in just a moment.